Monk.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. It's just good. Awake.
The way you're forcing those blinks, those are some hard blinks. Those are blinks of exhaustion.
Yes, that is fair. We recently went to Minneapolis for a wedding for our good friend Tim Turry. It was an excellent, excellent time. But yeah, travel and also, you know, things get backed up.
And then just a ton of life stuff as well.
Oh, yes. This has probably been, this might be the busiest week of my life. It's literally been like waking up first thing in the morning and then immediately having to run and just answer a billion things and prepare a bunch of things.
Well, yesterday it was really busy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And today has been absolutely insane too. So it's just been a, yes, exhausted is the word, I would say. Running on fumes. I don't know. Running on fumes makes me think tired. I have energy, but it's like a nervous, just like got to get stuff done, just like
just
a billion
so many
things.
Plates spinning.
Yes, and like every time I knock one thing off a to-do list, like 19 things get added. It's a lot. I'm doing my best to manage it. I would like to, I'd like to get back into a routine of like meditating and stuff, but it's such a cheap thing. You can't say I can't find time to meditate because it's 10 minutes, but like, literally has been hard to find 10 minutes lately.
Yeah, you have to make sure you're going to bed at a good time so that you have time to wake up and do that and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I've gotten into good swings of things before with it.
Yeah.
I just got to get back to it.
Yeah, it's just a matter of getting back to it. You know, it doesn't take much to throw off the routine, but then it also doesn't take much to reinstate the routine.
This is very true.
But because of that the chaos of the past week, we couldn't even find time to sit down and watch something together.
No.
So we called upon the community.
We did.
To give us some questions.
Our wonderful Panning the Stream community on Patreon and Discord.
Indeed. And they certainly delivered with a bunch of questions for us.
Yes, thank you for wrangling those up, putting it in a nice color-coded document I'm looking here.
This I wanted is, it to be great. Readable.
It's very readable. I'm reading it right now with my eyes.
Oh.
I'll read them out loud even when we're doing the thing.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah, so we're going to do a Q&A. I think, did we do one of these early on?
I think we did, and I think it might have been attached to something.
Yes, yeah. I think we added like an email section to the end of a movie discussion here.
Yeah.
But no, this is just going to be a straight up kind of Q&A episode, a little episode here where we just talk to you, the folks at home.
That's right.
Yes.
Answer the questions that everyone has on the tips of their tongues. Everyone wants to know the answers to these questions.
Yes. It's gone from the tips of their tongues to the screen of my iPad.
To the tiny little tootsies on their toes.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, should we get into it?
Yeah. Let's
all right.
do it.
Bonk, why don't you you kick us off here?
All right. Can I just get some question music?
Hey Siri, remind me find question music and insert into podcast.
Yes. Thank you, Daniel.
Yes.
Daniel.
Oh wait, were you just asking me to I don't even have to like do an MP3 thing. Were you asking me to just do like a
This first question comes from Destroy Tyler. If you both could eat McDonald's with an 80s movie action star of your choosing, who would you choose?
See, I just feel like this question, by the way, I have not looked over these, so I will be thinking of these in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think the McDonald's is just kind of an additive thing here. I don't think that would in any way change who I would choose here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it changes a little bit. It's different from like having a beer with someone, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes it a little... I'd be more nervous to do the McDonald's because I would have to worry about, like, eating and swallowing and stuff like that, whereas, like, a beer is, like, it's easier to swallow a liquid, and also that liquid makes me less nervous, so...
Well, I mean, you're thinking, I think, too specifically of the practicality of eating versus drinking.
Sure.
I think this is more of a conceptual question. For me, I think Eddie Murphy's character in Beverly Hills Cop, which I think that qualifies as an action movie, right? As comedy action. What was his name in that movie? Do you remember?
Axel Foley. But this is like the actor, right? Not the character.
The character. But I feel like the character is very much an extension of Eddie Murphy.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And because it's McDonald's, I just feel like it's fun to eat McDonald's. It's a fun thing. And he's seems like a fun guy. Seems like he has much more personality than the average 80s action star,
that
where there might not be a lot there. You know what I mean? Because they're too busy killing and stuff. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I love like Commando, for example, but I wouldn't want to necessarily hang out with Arnold from that movie because he just seems all about finding his daughter and shooting guns.
The thing, I wouldn't hang out with John Matrix, but I would hang out with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, yeah, but I don't think that's what the question is asking. You know
action star.
Oh, I that's true.
Yeah.
Maybe that is what the question is.
The human being, yeah.
Yeah. Well, in that case, I guess Arnold would have a lot of stories. I mean, it's either Arnold, Mel Gibson.
I'll pass on Mel.
Really? Why? He seems like such a great guy to get a drink with.
I don't think I'd go. Yeah, yeah. It seems like the best comes out when he's drunk. Yes.
Yeah.
Totally not his real dark, terrible self.
Bruce Willis.
Well, I've heard he's kind of a dick.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Yeah.
I feel like, okay, so if it says with 80s movie action star, that makes me think it would be the version of them from the 80s. Mm-hmm. So that would be fun because then let's say I'm sitting down with 1987 Arnold, like mm-hmm. whether I'm going back to 1987 or he's coming forward. I would like to be the one to break the news to Schwarzenegger in the 80s that he will be the governor someday.
I would want to tell him to not sleep with his maid.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Maria Shriver doesn't divorce him.
Absolutely, yes. We could really tell him.
Or if he does use protection, because that kid is going to look exactly like him.
Does he look like? Yeah. I haven't really seen his kid.
Yeah, it looks really? Exactly like Arnold. Undeniably Arnold.
Is the kid going into movies or anything?
I'm not sure.
Huh. All right. So we're both on Arnold there?
I think so. That seems to be like that. I feel like that's one of those questions that actually is not subjective, like it has a right answer, and I feel like Arnold
yeah
is right.
I mean, like, I love Stallone and everything, but I just feel like Schwarzenegger is such a more fascinating human. I think Schwarzenegger is one of the most fascinating guys on the planet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, definitely him.
Yeah.
Next one's coming up from Look It's Hunter, and the question is simple: which of your dogs is smarter?
Mm-hmm.
I think the answer is Razor, actually.
It's tough. They both have their you know, moments of just, wow, I can't believe you figured that out. And
yeah.
Then the thing about Razor is that he seems less curious about the world. He seems right. More just like he knows. He's very wary, but he, like, when there's something that weird that happens, more often than not, it's Gizmo that's responding inquisitively than Razor. He's kind of apathetic toward everything. And that does, in a way, suggest that he's smarter because he knows, like, what the deal is. But he also has very strange behaviors that just seem outright stupid.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like the incessant licking of the floor.
Yeah, I think that has to be, it's always by the food. So I think his dumb dog logic is that, like, oh, I'll get some flavor if I lick up around here. Because it's not like rent. Like, I've never seen him lick the floor anywhere but where the food goes.
Yeah, but the food, I mean, he's licking very specific parts that the food is not reliably on.
Oh,
but
never.
Fine, I accept that. Another weird thing he does is, like, sometimes inexplicably, you know, when we go to bed, the dogs usually jump on the bed.
Yeah.
Okay, and sometimes I'll go to bed and Gizmo will jump right on the bed and cuddle up. And then I'll just hear sometimes I'll just let it go to see how long it takes him. I'll just hear Razor, like, jump up, put his paws on the bed, but just not, like, follow through. And he just does that repeatedly. Like, he wants to jump up, but he's not physically capable of doing it. When I know for a fact that he is very physically capable.
He's done it hundreds of times.
Without
literally
thinking.
Every day.
Yeah, he just overthinks it and it drives him crazy.
He is better at, like, commands. You know, Gizmo will kind of just not listen to you, whereas, like, Razor will kind of reliably stay and sit and things like that. Gizmo will also just, like, go into weird kind of barky fits at literally nothing. Like, I was woken up the other night. He was just barking at the window, and, like, I got up and looked out the window, and it's like, the motion lights aren't on. There's nothing back there.
No
sounds.
He could have heard something that the motion lights didn't detect.
Like an owl or something, maybe.
But Gizmo, he has moments, too, where he, like, when he jumps through the railings and the fence, for example, I feel like he was the first dog to do that, to figure out the shortcut there. Like, he has his moments, you know? And there are some some expressions of awareness that I don't see all the time with Razor, but...
Yeah. Gizmo is all about, I think, physical comfort and love and affection and stuff like that, whereas Razor is very much in his head, for better and for worse, all the time. Like, you know, Razor's really good at FB, because
he's
sitting in the
room.
Yeah, he's
a natural born athlete.
It's the disc that you throw.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very good at, like, I'm going to go there, I'm going to get this, I'm going to bring it back to you. But he's also super up in his head about, like, I guess I can't jump on the bed today for some fucking reason.
Yeah, it was raining last night, and I didn't know where Razor was, and I, like, went to use the bathroom in the kitchen, and it was dark in there. You know, it's like, if the lights are off in that part of the house, it's pitch black. And I opened the bathroom door, and he was in the corner, like the furthest corner you could be in the bathroom, just in the corner, like in the dark, being afraid of the rain outside. So, yeah, they both have their pros and cons.
Yes, very much so. They're very different dogs despite being the same breed.
Yeah, they have a different distribution of the same amount of skill points, it seems.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, this question comes from our dear friend, Vertebreaker.
Vertebreaker, a mod on the Discord and the Twitch channel.
Very nice.
Yes.
Your favorite property that has received a game, movie, and TV adaption. And TV adaption. So I don't know if he wants three separate responses or one response that checks all of these boxes.
Well, okay, so there's like Terminator's one, because there have been a lot of Terminator games.
Yes.
A lot of Terminator movies, and they had the Sarah Connor Chronicles. So that counts.
Yeah, I feel like there are too few if we do it that way. So maybe
of
we just
all
pick
three.
Up. I think the best property that, like, okay, wait. So the property itself, I don't care about the IP, but the game, Chronicles of Riddick game, I think Escape from Butcher Bay or whatever. I remember that being really good, even though I didn't care at all about the, you know, the movie that it was based on or the prequel to or whatever. Yeah, that's one of those rare occasions where, like, the video game version of something that wasn't a video game prior is actually, like, I feel really exceptional.
Yeah, because I saw Pitch Black in the theaters and didn't think too much of it, but I loved that game. I thought that was excellent.
Interesting. I'm not familiar.
That was the first Riddick movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, with Vin Diesel.
And was made into a video game? Or are you talking about the one
I'm
talking about?
Just the, like, Riddick property, basically. Because, like, Pitch Black and then Chronicles of Riddick was the next one, and then there's the game.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's tough because it's like, are we saying the overall property we like, or is it saying like, oh, you know, the game could be great, but the movie wasn't like, I worry about things like Twisted Metal where it's like, I love the series so much, but then it's like the game series, but then like a TV series, it's like, I don't think that's for me.
Yeah.
At all.
Agreed. Yeah. Witcher, I thought was a great game, the whole trilogy. But I have no desire to watch the TV show. I've heard it's really atrocious.
I watched like one episode of it because we were considering it. It's like, oh, this seems like a layup for painting the stream. It's a Witcher thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, then I watched like an episode. I'm like, this seems like it sucks.
Obviously, Castlevania was really good.
That's what I'm leaning towards. Because like that is the like best mix of like, I fucking love the game series and I also love the TV series, you know?
Yeah. I think I've said this previously. I'm not as familiar with the games. I just played Symphony of the Night, but the show is absolutely phenomenal, even if you have no familiarity. So I think that in and of itself, I think, is probably a good argument for that being the correct response.
I was about to lock that in, but I think Mortal Kombat's got to be mine.
I disagree with that.
Well, yeah. I mean, my I enjoy it, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, I love the game series so much. I mean, the movies, I think, are campy, dumb fun. And then there was some TV series. So I'm not saying I like the TV series, and I don't think the movies are high art or anything, but I love the games so much. So, yeah, I'd say maybe I'll go with Mortal Kombat there.
All right.
Yeah. All right. I got one from LazyCon here saying, if you could get any video game made into a movie, which one and who would you get to direct it? Mario and Chris Pratt. I feel like everyone's going to expect me to say Metal Gear.
I don't expect that from you.
Yeah, because I think I've said so much about how I don't really necessarily
need that. Does not need a movie, no.
Donkey Kong 64. And I want several raps. Live action.
Uh-huh.
Directed by Mick G.
Who's that?
He was the music video director who made the Charlie's Angels movies in the early 2000s. I think he directed the Toxic video by Britney Spears.
Okay.
He goes by Mick G. And I think he would be my guy for the Donkey Kong 64 film.
All right.
Yes.
That sounds pretty good. That's quite the thinker there. Well, I would love Blade Runner to be made into a game, but that's, you know, been tried and fails, arguably, with Cyberpunk.
Well, there was a Blade Runner adventure game.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, that doesn't count, because like five people played that.
Right.
Wasn't it incredibly rare or something?
It was like incredibly hard to play, even, until they put it out on, I don't know if it was GOG or something put it out. But yeah, it was like an old CD-ROM, like 1997 game or something. Mm-hmm. I think people might have actually liked it. It just became impossible to play.
I would love a movie based on the Ninja Gaiden for the Xbox, the first one for the Xbox. With just like a, you know, a series of escalating boss battles as you try to kill this horrible asshole who burnt your whole village. And you have Rachel who's covered in alien goop all the time.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Actually, you saying that made me think Bayonetta.
Mm.
You know, the same type of like wacky action stuff, but also like Bayonetta's just a fun character.
Yeah.
I wonder if you'd get to play Bayonetta. That's just such a like loud character, you know? Like, that would require a lot of like physicality too.
Yeah.
Also
for
legs
sure.
That are like, you know, 9 feet tall.
You need really long legs.
Yeah. And like weird flippy Cirque du Soleil stuff that you could do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right.
Very excited about Bayonetta 3.
Yes, I am curious about it, why it's been so in the shadows and such.
Yeah, yeah. It looked good in that Nintendo Direct. It looked
exactly what I would expect it to look like.
Yeah, totally, which is very good. Like Bayonetta 2 was one of the best action movies of all time. And
I love how they're reinventing ways to have the hair suit, you know what I mean? Now she looks like she has like her sleeves are braids that are...
Oh, does it go all the way down her sleeves? I didn't see that.
Yeah, it looks like two like pigtail braids that are going down. It's
nice.
Very cute.
Nice.
All right, this next question comes from our friend Jessful Mongoose.
Hey, Mongoose.
What's a movie you wish were a video game, and what kind of game would you want it to be? I feel like these are very similar questions.
Yeah, what was the last? This is different. Well, the last one was if you could make any video game into a movie. So this is what's a movie that you would turn into a video game.
Okay, well, I just say Blade Runner, but aside from that... Dune.
But you haven't seen Dune or Red Dune or anything, have you?
Well, I've seen the David Lynch version.
Oh, I didn't know you'd seen that. Oh, yeah. Did you like that?
I mean, obviously the world was cool and stuff, and I'm very excited about the new film.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that would lend itself well to like a video game universe, you know? Maybe not that exact story, but certainly that world.
Yeah, yeah. Like a big Bethesda RPG or something.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
I'm going to go with Crank. And I think like certain games have had like cranked modes that are clearly like, I think it was one of the Black Ops or something, had a multiplayer mode called Cranked, if I'm remembering correctly. And like, if you killed someone, you would move faster and everything. Basically, you racked up kills. And I think, but once you kill someone, it starts a timer ticking down. So you have to like, oh, you've got 30 seconds to kill someone. And if you do kill someone, you go even faster and you're stronger and everything. But then if the timer goes down to zero, you like explode.
Yeah. I think the Raid would be a good a good video game if it was like a, you know, a tower ascending kind of thing. Every floor is progressively more difficult.
Or John Wick. They made Hex, but like that is not what I think anyone wanted out of John Wick.
No, I would love like a IOI John Wick game.
Yes. They're doing Bond, which I'm curious about. That's a really intriguing concept.
I mean, that's a great match, for sure.
Yeah.
But they're just so good at like third person action, so.
Yeah. All right. You got Killer Kid Clever saying, what is a movie you had the lowest expectations going into but enjoyed significantly more than you expected?
I think recently we watched that Jason Statham movie, Wrath of Man, which I thought was really enjoyable. I mean, it was like a really good one of those types of movies. Like, I thought it would be kind of mediocre, but it was actually exceptionally good for that type of movie.
Yeah, I had never even heard of it. And you brought it up and you're like, oh, I saw this is coming out this weekend. And I was like, yeah, I'll just go in blind, no expectations. And then we wound up liking that a lot.
Yeah.
On that tip, I would also say The Guest.
Ooh, yes, The Guest.
Because that is one. You know what? Tim Curry is an incredible person, but also an incredible recommender of things.
I trust his recommendations.
Yes, which is why he tells us to watch The Guest, and it's like, I don't know who this guy is. I don't know. I don't think at the time I knew really who Adam Wingard was, the director. And so I had no expectations going in. And it's just like, all right, Tim says this. He has done us right in the past with like The Hitcher and different recommendations.
Absolutely.
And we watched it, and like, I fucking loved that movie.
It was fantastic. It was so well-paced. I was just into it the whole time.
Yeah, it did, like, kind of that 80s thing without just being too just like, hey, remember the 80s? You know, like, it just had that vibe. It wasn't set in the 80s, but it, like, kind of had that 80s action thriller, almost horror vibe to it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I love how, like, how tonally it shifts just right at the end there.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. This next question is from BigEasy69. What is a go-to comfort food movie for you guys when you just want to throw something on when you can't decide what to watch? For my wife and I, it's Couples Retreat. I feel like you and I, we don't really have a lot of those moments where we're just kind of laying around like, I want to put something on, let me just put it on a movie that we've... Because like when between the podcast where, you know, we want to watch new movies or, you know, things that we haven't watched previously so that we could discuss them.
Yeah.
Or video games, you know, I want to play things that are new. I want to watch things that are new for these purposes. For video games, it's work related. You know, I feel like I don't feel like I have the time to... I really want to play the Mass Effect re-release, for example, that they released the trilogy. But it just doesn't make sense when there's new things coming out. I have to play new things. I can't spend my time playing a game that came out like, you know, 10 years ago. So
yeah, it's kind of hard time management wise to like, you know, when we first moved into the house, we watched the first four seasons of The Wire and we like burned through it in a way that like we have not binged a show in that way damn near ever, you know. Maybe the Jinx and that miniseries. That was like five episodes. That was one night, yeah. But like we burnt through four seasons of The Wire. And then I don't know what happened where it's like things got caught up and everything.
I think it's a confluence, a lot of that stuff. I think it was like happened to be a lull for both of us work-wise.
Yeah,
And we had a lot of free time. And I think us both just being so invested in it, we really made time for it.
And that's to say we finished season four, which I think we both think is maybe the best season. Mm-hmm. And we're waiting. We have five. And it's just five. like 10 episodes, I think. And we keep like we're gonna do it.
Of course, yeah. But the longer we put it off, the more The Wire I get to watch for the first time. So.
That is true. That's you were thinking the same thing with It Takes Two, the game. That's why we're putting off that last level.
Yep, that's exactly why. Let's move on to the next question.
Okay. Next one. Are you next?
I believe you are. You are the one that reads.
Yes. This is from the Master DS. Are there any 80s action movies everyone loves that you hate?
You know, I think as someone who didn't grow up in the 80s, the movies that I go back to from the 80s that I haven't seen, obviously, because I wasn't born then, are always ones that are recommended to me. And generally people, especially when it comes to that 80s action movie, you know what's a good 80s action movie when you see it. Like that in and of itself is a genre, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if someone's suggesting that, then I know it's good and chances are I'll like it because I'm a sucker for that specific genre. So I'm rarely like suggested things from the 80s that are just like mediocre. You know, they always end up being like, oh, I heard about this.
Oh, you haven't seen RoboCop?
Like, exactly. Yeah. So it's hard. Maybe, you know what? I don't know if Conan with Arnold is, I think that's from the 80s. I don't want to say that's bad. But I only saw it once when I was younger, and I don't remember anything about it. And it's one of those movies that I feel like I never really hear about. So I think that maybe that was just kind of an inconsequential movie. I am curious about it. I know you haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen either Conan
movies, definitely
no.
go back to it, because I seriously don't remember anything about it other than Arnold says, what is best in life?
Right. Yeah, I know some of those quotes, but mm-hmm. I always heard it was like kind of a slower-paced one, and Arnold wasn't full-on Arnold mode yet. You know?
Yeah. So I don't know. But yeah, I can't really answer with confidence, because I feel like a lot of the stuff I've seen has lived up to the hype, you know?
Yeah, and I think hates is such a strong word. Yeah. I mean, there are very few 80s action movies I would say I hate. I can't think of any, actually. But ones that I just don't, like, I think people would assume that I'm really into, like, Seagal and Van Damme.
Oh, for sure.
And I just haven't seen a lot. You know, yes. I think I saw the second Under Siege. I finally got around to seeing Bloodsport and Kickboxer, and they were both pretty awesome. But it's like, I came so late to those. I mean, I was in my, like, 30s before I started really watching those, so I don't have that reverence for Seagal and Van Damme that I have for. But I mean, you can gain that. Like, I didn't know anything about Swayze. And mm-hmm. then when we did that Summer Swayze last year, it was like, oh man, he's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
you know?
He's fantastic. I feel like Van Damme is, you know, that name elicits respect. But Seagal, like, his movies are truly like so bad it's good, sometimes just plain so bad, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sure there's some like Hard to Kill, or there's probably a couple that like people thought were like, oh, this is prime Seagal, this is the best stuff. But like anytime I've ever seen anything of him, I've just never felt like there was a charisma that drew me to him. The way there were like a Schwarzenegger or Stallone, there's this inherent charisma.
Absolutely.
You know?
There's something you said about that for sure. Like there's a creepiness factor that is really hard to put into words. Like I get this vibe from people sometimes where it's just like, I don't know what it is about this person, but they're like creeping me out. You know what I mean?
Sure,
I don't
feel
comfortable around them. They feel like on edge. They feel like they're too aware of everything they're doing. Like, I feel like I get that vibe very much from Steven Seagal. And because of that, it's hard for me to get into him as like a hero. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. This next question comes from Hamburger Buffet.
That's a good name.
What, in your opinion, has the best pilot episode?
Oh, boy. I'm trying to think of shows I've really enjoyed. It's definitely not like Simpsons, because they hadn't dialed anything in yet. It wasn't South Park.
I feel like the cliche answer is Breaking Bad is a really good pilot
that
episode.
That is a solid pilot that really...
Game of Thrones. It's, you know, I feel like Game of Thrones pilot episode is very underrated, because that is such a good episode. It sets up everything so well. And even people who are like averse to fantasy and averse to the prospect of getting into a story that has so many characters, so many moving parts, and is such a huge epic thing... And yet it still manages to hook those people. Like, I watched it with my family, and my parents are not the kind of people that I would necessarily think would be into, like, for example, I know they hated Lord of the Rings, right?
Sure, yeah.
But, yeah, they were super into it. I mean, it's a very effective pilot episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember being pretty into it right away. This is tricky because, like, I know there are a lot of shows that I liked right from the beginning, but right. I feel like if I can't think of a specific thing from the pilot, then I can't confidently. Like, you know, I remember, like, the Wire pilot is good. I remember Sergeant McNulty and the guy talking about Snot Boogie.
Yeah,
you know?
I remember, like, that because that would replay, like, whenever we, yes. for some reason, HBO Max would, like, crap out on us, and we'd go to, like, season 4, episode 5, and it would play the first episode, and it would still say episode 4, season 5.
And it'd be like, I think we've seen this, like, blood on the pavement pan up before, and then they start talking about Snot Boogie, and it's like, yep, we've seen this. Weird answer, the one that's coming to mind right now that I can actually, like, really remember what happens in the pilot is How To with John Wilson.
Oh, sure.
I remember right away, like, not knowing what the show was about. Mm-hmm. You heard, I think, Ben Hansen talk about it on Min-Max, and I was like, yeah, let's check it out. And Nathan Fielder's involved. Great. Mm-hmm. And that's the one where it's just like, I was so invested in just like, what's the next shot going to be? What's the next weird thing? And then they wind up going to that spring break and talking to that guy. And, like, right. at first he seems like just kind of this weird kind of burnout idiot. And then I think he was kind of a weird burnout guy, but like, he sat and talked to him. And, like, it's like, oh, we're actually, like getting this glimpse of a human being. Like, it was just so much more than I expected as far as, you know, right out of the gate.
That's a really great answer.
So that's what I would go with, you know. I'm sure if I sat down and thought about every show I've ever seen, there might be a more glaring one that comes out. But that's the one that comes to mind now.
Yeah, it did a great job of, like, establishing that, like, oh, this is kind of a voyeuristic thing where we're capturing people that don't necessarily know that they're being watched. And, like, sometimes they do funny, shitty things. But, like, ultimately, you know, the people are treated with a lot of empathy and respect. And it's a lot very heartfelt moments in that show. And a lot of just bizarre penis antics.
Penis antics. Oh, God, that song. There's Kyle MacLachlan trying to swipe a Metro card for a while. That is just, oh, man, I can't wait for season 2 of that show.
Yeah.
Next up from Max Powers 911. It is, do you miss video game shows? Which do you remember? Now, I think the obvious one here is Nick Arcade. And that would have been before your time, I think, Bonk.
Yeah, I can't really think of any video game game shows. Like, when I can think of a lot of video game shows, like, from G4. Like, I remember the old, like, original format of Attack of the Show, like, before it was, I mean, I think Adam Pereira was on it, but, like, before Olivia Munn and, like, old, what was it, X-Play episodes and Cinematech with Tommy Tallarico.
I never saw G4.
Yeah, I used to watch it all the time in, like, the early 2000s and stuff. It was great. I mean, there's like a lot of great stuff, like, for someone that was obviously really young and not in the industry yet. And, like, when you're not in the industry, any insight into it, like, when you see stuff like, oh, this footage from E3 or whatever, it just all seems so glamorous and amazing. I enjoyed G4 a lot, but I don't know if that necessarily answers his question, but to be honest, I don't think I've ever seen a video game show.
Yeah, I mean, the only one I can really think of is Nick Arcade, and to be fair, I loved it. I just thought it was so funny, even back then, that, like, it was so clear that, like, TV producers and not gamers were producing it, because they would always bring the kids to, like, their version of the Double Dare physical challenge was, we're going to bring you over to these arcade kiosks, which were just consoles, I think.
Yeah.
And it would just do things that, like, challenges that no one would ever do if they played that game, where it's like, all right, you've got 30 seconds with Sonic the Hedgehog, and you got to get 10,000 points. And it's like,
points.
I've never once heard, I've played all the Sonics, and I've never heard anyone be like, I got the most points in a Sonic.
Yeah.
But that reeks of a TV producer being like, oh, high score, you got to get the high score in Sonic, and, like, having no idea it's not that kind of game, you know?
What was the name of that reality show with, like, I think it was something like, if you win, you get to be an intern at Sony or some shit?
Oh, The Tester.
Yeah, The Tester.
They did, I think, several seasons that me and Hanson a few years ago in Minneapolis watched, like, a few episodes of it, and it's
really cringy.
Yeah, it ain't great. Yeah. I think one of the guys wound up being, like, super famous or something. He was, like, a game grump or something.
Oh, okay.
So we looked up all the people, and it's like, oh, this guy's got, like, a bajillion followers, and turned into, like, a big name. But yeah, Nick Arcade, love that.
All right. This next question comes from Carsend. What's an anime you get recommended all the time but decided you will not watch it? Side question, is it Attack on Titan? I mean, I've heard a lot of times that we should watch that show, Attack on Titan.
I've heard that too.
I feel like the ones we've heard about the most, namely My Hero and Evangelion, we've obviously already watched.
Yeah.
I loved Cowboy Bebop so much. It's one of my favorite shows. I was obsessed with it when it used to air on Adult Swim as a kid. And you and I, we dabbled a little bit, I feel like, when we were
like
in San
Francisco.
And it's such a fantastic show. I'd love to get back to that.
I would do that sometime. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting anime, like, that I would be curious to go back to.
I don't know what it is about anime, but more than any kind of fandom, it's just like, I feel like you say the word anime into a microphone and you are inviting a jillion people to send you long emails about, like, and, you know, very well-meaning emails of being like, I think you'd like this, and here's why you'd like this. But there's something about anime where anime fans just want to constantly recommend anime to you. And it's like, it's almost overwhelming the amount of emails I've gotten about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like with a lot, I guess you could say this about anything, but when you get into it, there's so many shows and stuff that, like, there's the obvious things that we just named, some of them that, like, are obviously really good. And there's just so much there. And I think a lot of stuff, like, might go under a lot of people's radar, so I could totally understand if someone's really passionate about something, them wanting to share it.
Yeah, and then sometimes it's like, oh, there's only 900 episodes, so Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's rough too. That's what I love about Evangelion and Cowboy Bebop. Yes. There's only a handful of episodes.
Yes. But to answer one, I would say JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. I've heard plenty of people recommend that to me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, Attack on Titan, I've heard a lot. I really want to go back to FLCL, though no one's recommended that to me. But
I've heard there's one
that as a kid.
FLCL?
Yeah, FLCL. Fully Cooley? Okay. Something like that.
I feel like there's one that's just straight up Rocky that I've gotten a lot of people recommend to me. Geese Peep says, what's y'all's favorite horse riding experience in a video game? First Red Dead. I enjoyed the horse riding in the first Red Dead. I like anything where you can just whistle and the horse just shows up. Like,
Ghost of Tsushima had that.
Tsushima's is good. I was leaning towards Breath of the Wild being my choice. Ghost of Tsushima's actually got some real good horse stuff.
I think I've said this about Red Dead 2. It's one of my favorite moments ever in a video game. But Red Dead 2 also has the thing where it's like you really have an emotional bond with your horse because you're, you know, essentially leveling it up. You're customizing its appearance. You're naming it. You really have a relationship with it. I used to just spoil the shit out of my horse, constantly feeding it and giving it pets. And then, you know, I was really sad at the end. But there was this one moment, and I've probably mentioned this on the podcast before, but I was playing Red Dead and I was just like, you know, exploring, and I was on horseback and it started to rain. I was just on the horse going through the rain at night. It was so peaceful, and I cut through the woods and the rain stopped and it was just like complete silence. And then all of a sudden I just heard like all the bugs and the wind and the whole forest coming alive again slowly around me. And like, if you've ever lived or been in like a rural area where there's like a lot of dense woods, that's exactly what happens. It's dead silent for like a minute or two after it's raining, and then everything slowly comes alive again. You hear the water falling off leaves and just you know, birds and everything moving. It's just so peaceful, and that moment literally brought tears to my eyes. It was not tied to anything story related. It wasn't planned or scripted. It wasn't like a, you know, engineered to happen that way. It was just completely organic, and it just blew my mind.
It's just the fact that they would consider that, though, of like, you know, like the attention to detail of like, okay, after a rain, you know, then we'll bring up the, you know, like it wasn't scripted in the way that like you were at a part in the game where this happens in a story mission, but it was like the systems in place were there. And that shows an incredible attention to detail.
Yeah. I mean, that game is just like as restrictive, you could make the argument that it is very restrictive gameplay wise and really forces you to do certain things, and it doesn't give you a lot of freedom when you're locked into something. But as far as like emergent experiences as like a solo player, it's just like, I feel like incomparable. It's truly mind-blowing, but
very impressive game.
Incredible level of fidelity in that one.
Said another contender would be Shadow of the Colossus. And actually, if I'm saying my own personal favorite, now that I think about it, it's probably Ocarina of Time, just because it's like big 3D adventure. It was so early on in that kind of genre, and like having this huge open Hyrule field with Zelda music playing. Like, I think Epona and Ocarina is probably my number one.
That's probably a fair answer.
Yeah.
Okay. This next question comes from Driving D Van. Your favorite game to play either cooperatively or head-to-head with each other? I feel like that's an easy question lately.
Competitive is very easy to answer. It is Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo.
Yes.
Which I think we're 27, 25 you?
Yes.
Yes, you're up two now.
First to 100 wins the season of Croy.
Yes.
The inaugural score war on our MAME cabinet.
And we'll hold the trophy until the next season is completed, in which case you have to defend the trophy.
Yep. Well, now that Ken's out of play, I definitely can see the path to victory.
It's been a very quick, you've become very formidable now that Ken is not on the table. Yes. Cooperatively? Gears Horde Mode was a blast.
I feel like we played that so much. We played Gears 5 Horde Mode many times, much more than we usually do
for a
co-op game. And it was just so much fun every time.
Yeah, you would be Sarah Connor, and you were big on like repairing turrets and stuff, right? And, or you would stay at the... What were the things you would like mine things?
Yeah,
you know?
If you let like the, there are these things that could mine resources for you, but if they were like vulnerable to damage, and I think they use resources to create in the first place, so you kind of have to protect them.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sarah Connor with that. What's the name of like that revolver?
Boltok.
The Boltok. Yeah. About it. But I mean, it's just such a great pace of gameplay for co-op specifically because it has those kinds of period, the lulls between battles where you can set up defenses, you can talk a little.
Yeah.
And it's very constantly moving. Like you can't really hunker down as much as you try in that game.
No.
Because the AI is so good. Like it really gets all up in your grill and the enemy variety. I mean, there's enemies that just will. I mean, there's those giant, massive ones mm-hmm. that just stomp their way wherever they want to go.
So many different ones, so many different weapons. It gives you that great feeling of, like, I feel like everyone in every horde round has some sort of moment where they're just, like, wildly hot, like, doing that roll mm-hmm. around. It's like, yeah, I gotta get the fuck out of here, gotta get the fuck out of here, shit. Like, oh, it's so much fuck. Or someone gets downed and that mad scramble to, like, you know, do the roadie mm-hmm. run over to them. Like, that's a good game.
It's a great co-op game. Unlike a lot of co-op games, that actually necessitates communication between you and your teammates. So it's really good. I can't see playing it like through matchmaking, but with friends, it's really a great experience.
100%. Yeah. Actually, just talking about it makes me like, oh, God, I would love to play that again sometime.
Yeah.
Next one, Elko84 says, Black and White Cookie, yay or nay?
Hell yeah.
I don't know if this is an East Coast thing because I never heard of it before I met you.
Really?
Uh-uh.
Do you know what they are, though? Can you visualize?
Yeah, I've seen them. Like, they're a staple, it seems, in like New York delis and bagel places and stuff like that. Like, I've seen them in New York a lot. Mm-hmm. I think you got one once or twice and had me try some, and like, it tasted really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a very simple. It is what you think it is. Very simple. It's a massive disc. It's like kind of a spongy, cakey kind of cookie. Like usually a little soft. It's not crunchy. It's chewy. It's soft. One half has vanilla icing, the other half chocolate. And ideally you get a little bit in each bite. Or if you're like me, you eat the vanilla first and save the chocolate for last because it's the best part. It's a phenomenal cookie.
I don't know, one that was like peanut butter, I think. I'm not as much of a like chocolate vanilla guy.
All right. Well, I mean, listen, it's the Black and White cookie. You introduce peanut butter in the mix, that's a whole other ball game.
It's a different cookie at that point, yes. But it's good. It's not one I would buy, but like, if I'm having a bite of it, I'll go, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I don't think there's any cookie that I would eat that I would be like repulsed by. I think any cookie is at least going to be really good. Oh, you know, meringues, so like, you know what I'm talking about? They're like chalky.
Yeah.
Those are
weird.
Bad. I don't like those.
They're weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like those. I feel like they're just wrong. I feel like I'm eating chalk.
The texture's weird. Yeah.
Oh, it's so bad. All right. This question comes from Doodad. Would you rather have Nintendo going back to the main stage of console competition or keep doing its own separate parallel thing?
Definitely the latter. I feel like the days of Nintendo trying to keep up with the Joneses in terms of like graphics and multi-platform stuff and everything, I think that ended with the era of PS2, GameCube, and Xbox. Because ever since then, for better and for worse, they have done their gimmicks. Or it's been like, here's the DS. Hey, we got two screens. Here's the Wii. It's motion. Here's the Wii U. It's got this dumbass gamepad. Mm-hmm. Here's the Switch, which is like this incredible. I don't even really consider that a gimmick. That's just like incredible functionality, mm-hmm. you know? So I am never expecting Switch to have like the level of fidelity of Sony and Microsoft. They're not in that game. They're not competing with that. And with the stuff that I love on Nintendo, it's a lot of like, you know, Mario Zelda type stuff. I don't need 4K. Like that art style looks fucking great. In just straight up HD, like in 1080p. Like, it'll be nice once it goes to like 4K and everything. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, you play Mario Kart 8 right now, which came out in 2013. That game looks fantastic.
Yeah.
So I think Nintendo is best when they're just being bold and weird and crazy. And I think if, like, the next generation, they were just like, we're rivaling the PlayStation 6 and the Xbox. You know, it's like, nah, that's not what I'm looking for out of Nintendo. You know?
Yeah, they do their own thing. It's insanely creative. Very like it's different audience. And I mean, obviously, there's a lot of crossover there as well because you're someone that definitely appreciates like super amazing performance and high fidelity and everything.
I love it all. Yeah.
The fact is, like, game design wise, and Nintendo is just such a purity and elegance to their games. And that doesn't require crazy graphics, crazy fidelity, crazy, you know, frame rate or whatever.
It's weird to me if like Zelda looked like Skyrim, where it's just like, and it's like, no, I'm fine with this kind of like cartoony art style. And like, it's not going to be like, you know, pushing the polygons necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy because that's absolutely true. But then simultaneously that game's doing things that like the most insane, like AAA first person games are like, aren't even close to doing.
No, it's 5 years old and it feels like it's still 10 years ahead of its time.
Yeah. You know? But anyway, you said it the best. I can say it better than you said it. So leave it to Dan, the resident Nintendo mark, to really.
I am. I'll give him, you know, I'll credit that. I have given them plenty of bad reviews.
Oh, I'm being completely sarcastic. Yeah. It just always makes me real. Like, you've given so many, like, mediocre reviews to Nintendo games.
Oh, yeah. They make a bunch of dumbass decisions.
Back
when
you were at Giant Bomb, I was real mad when they're like, oh, he's such a mark.
He'll like anything Nintendo, but he always have old 5-star Nintendo Dan. Like, well, here's my 2-star Star Fox review. Here's my 2-star Paper Mario review. Here's
Kirby,
all this stuff.
Right?
Yeah, I get plenty of. Yeah. Peekaboo says, what's a camera technique that makes you go, ooh, ah? I personally love the zoom out while moving the camera forward effect. That is absolutely that's my choice.
That's a cool one.
My favorite, or the first one that comes to mind, is definitely Jaws, when like I think it's the first time that Brody's just kind of like sitting there monitoring the beach, and it's obvious that there's a shark attack coming, and he kind of like, I don't know if he has like the newspaper or something, he puts it down, but it does that full on just like crash zoom type thing. I don't think crash zoom is the right term, but you know what I mean, where it's like the camera's coming forward and it's zooming out. It's just a really cool effect.
I like when there's really wide shots in like high action moments, because it makes it feel so much more visceral and realistic. The Hitcher did this really well, where like, you know, a lot of times when there's like a crazy car chase or whatever, they'll be zooming in, zooming out, like a lot of crazy editing, quick edits and stuff like that. But the way The Hitcher did it, just as an example of this, like there was one one scene where a car gets into an accident, and it happens in a wide shot, so you just feel like it's just happening in front of you, and it's presented so plainly, and it just feels so much more real. And like that, when the presentation feels real, then the situation feels so much more believable, and you're so much more bought into the horror and the terror of that, of the idea of just some insane person just hunting you down for like no real reason whatsoever. Yeah. That I feel like that was such a good use of that. And I also love, I feel like this might be a more of a photography thing that you see, but when you ever see tilt shift when they do that with
it's awesome.
I think that effect is so cool because it makes everything look like a toy.
It looks like a little like model train set or a town.
Like
you know?
A diorama. Like, yeah. I love the way that looks.
Yeah. I don't like it in action when I notice the direction a lot of the times, you know, unless it's like the thing is the direction and it's like a stylish thing.
Like Army of the Dead. Zack Snyder.
Oh, yeah. That did a bunch of like flash stuff and that worked.
Very loud directing.
But I feel like some I forget the name of the director, the guy who did the first Bourne movie and stuff, where it's just like the action is just like really frenetic and like handheld. And like half the time I just can't tell what I'm seeing.
I hate that.
I much prefer when it's like you say, like a wide shot and clear thing, you know, like this is what I'm looking at right now, you know.
One of my favorite scenes is the hallway hammer scene from Old Boy.
It's quite good.
He's just going through the hallway against all odds with a hammer and just beats the shit out of a bunch of guys. And it's all from the side, so it like pans down the hallway. It's so good.
Remember the True Detective scene that's in one shot?
Oh my God, unbelievable.
It's insane.
That was like a 10-15 minute scene that's
crazy,
just crazy
elaborate
action.
In and out of houses, streets, helicopters, just fucking crazy.
Oh my God, you really felt like you were like on the ground with them. It was so good.
Yeah, I watched that several times.
All right. This question is from Cuban?
Mm-hmm.
Cuban? Probably Cuban.
Yeah.
Are you two going to give Avatar The Last Airbender series? All right, let me start from the beginning. Are you two going to give Avatar The Last Airbender series a go for the podcast?
Now, Bonk, I have spent several weeks now trying real hard not to throw you under the bus. On Fire Escape, when I've been Mary Kish and holding a knife to my throat, being like, "Why haven't you watched it?" I'll let you take it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't written it off completely. It's just like I said earlier in the podcast. You know, the times that Dan and I get to sit down and watch something together is so rare, and I don't think there would be any value in us just watching a few episodes of that show and doing podcasts on it. I think the value would be in doing a season, doing a podcast, doing a season.
Like we did with Castlevania.
Exactly. Yeah. And that would be such a big commitment, especially like at this particular point in our lives where things are just crazy. I'm not saying it's not going to happen at some point, but it didn't grab – that first episode definitely didn't grab me enough to want to proceed at this point. I've heard it being talked about on Fire Escape, and I completely own up to that, Mary, if you're listening, which I know you are, but if you are, it's totally my fault. I'm very anything that I perceive as like intended for children, like I know My Hero Academia, like it could be consumed by kids and they would enjoy it, but I feel like there's another level there that's like a deep emotional level. Like the dialogue is so good that it goes in so many different places. And granted, I've only seen 15 minutes of the show, but it was just like a lot of giggling and just such a simple, basic story. Like these different elements and you know people that can manipulate. It's just like not doing it for me at all.
I remember I thought it was gonna lose you. There's a part where like they got some flying space dog thing or whatever, and it sneezes on the Avatar boy, and like it's just like ugh, boogers or something. And I was like, oh, there goes the chance of the bonk. I wanted to watch. It's like, that seems like such a kid thing. Yeah, and like I'm not gonna act like I was like super into it, but yeah, you're right. It's like, especially with the way we do Painting the Stream now, it's like we used to do it at the beginning where it's like we watched episodes 1 through 3 of this thing we found, and we'll still occasionally do like a fixer upper or something, you know, like some show. It's like, let's just see what this show is. But I feel like now, like Castlevania is a great example. It's like, we're not going to break a season of Castlevania into like 3 episodes of the podcast. Right. You know, we're going to like watch the whole thing, which means like we have to be pretty confident that it's going to be worth our while in terms of like, we're going to enjoy this. You know, like Castlevania, yeah, we'll watch the whole 4th season and then do an episode on it because like we love that show. You
absolutely
know?
And that I knew that immediately after watching the first episode, that like tonally and like the level of violence and the storytelling was just so good that I wanted to watch more.
Yeah.
Now it's that's the thing with shows. It's like it's easy to watch a movie that's really bad.
Yes.
Or a movie that's mediocre, but a show is so much more of a commitment. And because there's not a lot of value in just doing a one-on-one episode of it, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, not writing off completely, but unlikely in the near future.
Yep. Nicholas Renaud says, can you think of a great bathroom scene that really made a story point well in a film?
So there's this movie called Eastern Promises. Have you seen it?
Viggo Mortensen?
Yep. Have you seen it?
I don't think. I saw History of Violence. I always get that mixed up. I know you liked Eastern Promises a lot.
They're both fantastic movies.
Yeah.
Eastern Promises has this shower fight scene with a knife and 2 naked mafioso, and it's just so incredible. It's just so brutal and just visceral, and it's them being naked is like less a novelty and more it makes the fighting feel so much more like there's no protection at all. You're completely on the open and this guy's a knife. That's a great fight scene. The bathroom scene in Mission Impossible Fallout.
That was my choice.
Yeah.
That fight's fucking sweet.
Oh, so good. I love Walker. I love the fact that he just always walks everywhere. But yeah, I feel like that's the first like establishing scene of him being a total badass.
When he cocks his fists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or his arms. Cool. Yeah. Very that cool. Movie's just ridiculous.
So good. It's such a good movie.
Yeah, that would be my pick. It's like, I know the question is like, that makes a story point. But I mean, I guess that bathroom fight wasn't just in a vacuum.
No.
That like, that they were trying to find that guy. Yeah.
Just because it's a fight scene doesn't mean it's not super critical for the story.
It's just so fucking good.
Yeah.
Jesus. Also, you know, the Austin Powers one with Tom Arnold taking a shit and then they start choking the guy and says, who does number two work for? Who does number two work for? And Tom Arnold's in the other stall thing. He's talking about... you tell that poo-poo's boss.
Yeah, I think Carrie, you know the movie Carrie? The scene?
Yeah.
I think she's taking a shower when she gets her period or something for the first time, even though she's like clearly like 18 years old and fully developed. It's so funny to me when shows do that or movies do that. But that was an important scene in the movie because it just showcases how sheltered she is. Like she didn't even know what was going on with her body.
Oh, wow.
There's some good stuff. There's some good stuff for sure. The Eastern Promises one sticks out for me, yeah.
Nice.
All right, finally, from Snick, best/worst movie theater experience?
I gotta say first time seeing MacGruber
And that was your one of the best?
Yeah, just dying, dying. And there were enough people in the theater that were also right there with me. But also there were plenty of people who were just like, this is dumb as fuck. Like it was just this weird vibe in there and I could just never forget it. Cause it was so much funnier than I expected. Yeah. I thought it was just going to be this dumb mess. I didn't really care about the sketches and I just lost my fucking mind. Snakes on a Plane was kind of a funny one because I was in college and that was very kind of like early meme stuff where it's like everybody was freaking out about like on Reddit and message boards about like, we got to make this movie the biggest movie of all time because they thought it was funny that he said, you know, actually he didn't say it initially. They went back and did reshoots and everything. But anyway, I went to a midnight screening in college and like everyone was tanked. Everyone was bringing in like bottles of liquor and stuff. And like, I think I convinced my friends to like buy a bunch of rubber snakes and stuff. And we brought rubber snakes and we're throwing them and stuff. And just like, it was just a dumbass big party, you know, a bunch of people who were in on the joke. And I remember that being a lot of fun.
What about your worst?
I feel like anytime there's just like someone that's like really talking a lot and being a dick about it, you know?
Go ahead.
Oh, my first date I've ever been on in my life, probably. Because I remember just being so fucking nervous and not knowing what to do. I was 14 and I saw What Dreams May Come with Robin Williams, the one where he dies and goes to heaven and hell. That was the first date movie I ever went on. And Elizabeth, a girl I knew from school, was sitting next to me. And she would later tell me that the entire time we were watching the movie, she was trying to kiss me. And that would have been my first kiss. But I was just like, I honestly did not realize that. I think I was just so just like white knuckling like my seat arms and looking straight ahead just because I was so worried about everything. I just remember being very nervous. No! Can I tell one more quick story?
Yeah, of course.
It's also an early dating movie story. And it was the most awkward goddamn thing. Oh my God. So there's this girl, Jennifer, in high school that I had a big crush on. And I spent like 7 months working up the courage to ask her out. Finally asked her out. And I was like, oh, let's go see A Beautiful Mind together. So I guess my friend Ryan, because I'd spent like the better part of a year being, I'm so nervous, I gotta ask her out, I can't ask her out, she's not gonna like me, blah, blah, blah. And I guess after I asked her and I told Ryan, I was like, oh my God, she said yes, we're going to see Beautiful Mind this weekend. I guess he told her that like, oh yeah, Dan's been talking to me, he's been wanting to date you forever or something dumb like that. And she called me and was like, hey, before we see the movie tomorrow, I heard from Ryan that you were thinking this was like more than a friend's thing. And I was like, I'd be fine with it. If you don't, we can be friends. But if also, if you want, you know, like, just like, just having no idea how to fucking handle it. And she was like, okay, just want to make sure, you know, like, totally cool going, you know, being, you know, you're a cool guy. I like being friends with you. Like, but I'm not looking for more than that. And we're like, okay. And so we go to the theater. I got there first, early, nervous, bought two tickets. And then she came in and just like, you know, very kind of like coldly, like not meanly, but she was just like, oh, you can return one of those. I got mine. And I was like, oh, okay. So this is definitely not a date. And I returned the one. And then we just kind of sat next to each other in very awkward silence the entire time and then never discussed it again.
Oh, wow. That is incredibly awkward.
After 7 months of wanting to ask her out. Now I'm just sitting there just like, yeah.
Yeah, there's a more recent one that comes to mind with you when we went to see Coco. I had taken an edible beforehand, and we were in the theater, and, you know, it had kicked in, and it was, like, right, really getting into the good parts of the movie. Like, movie's really picking up. And this guy opens the movie theater door and walks in, and he has, like, he has long hair. He's wearing these, like, fingerless gloves. He was just, like, you know, this guy just looked like he was very purposefully walking down the aisle. He walked straight down the aisle and through the exit. So he wasn't even a, like, patron of the theater. He wasn't watching the movie. He just opened went to the theater, walked through the theater, and went to the exit.
Seemed like he was casing the place.
Yeah, it really scared me. And because I had just taken edible, I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I was so paranoid. And, like, you can't help but think, you know, after many horrible, tragic events in history that, like, you know, as Americans, we tend to be wary of things and very self-aware when it comes to that stuff or having awareness of our environment. And I got very scared and I was like, Dan, can we go to the bathroom? And then when we stepped out, I was like, we have to go.
Yeah, we're like, yeah, you want me to go to the bathroom? You're like, yes, just trust me. And I'm like, okay.
I need to get out of there. There was no way I was going to be able to enjoy that movie. And then a good experience. There was one time where, like, earlier last year, pre-pandemic, you went on a work trip and I was like in Stanford by myself, and this was pre-pandemic, so still everything was open. And there was that Avon Theater place, near our house that like this like art house theater, and it's very cool. And I took myself on a little date. I went to the coffee shop. I got a little snack. I got a little coffee. I went to see the movie. I saw, A Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and it was just such a little date that I took myself on. It was very sweet and it was a great film. And I have very fond memories of that day.
That sounds really nice.
And you should always take yourself out on dates.
I don't think I've ever done that.
Well, just do fun things by yourself sometimes. It's really great.
Can I, like, sitting on a couch and playing a video game for a while? Is that...
Well, I mean, like, I feel like date implies going somewhere. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I've done that, really. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's a pleasant movie theater experience I had.
Nice. I remember you saying it was very much not a Dan movie.
Oh, no. No, it was not.
Not at all.
Even though it was about, like, two gorgeous women falling in love, it was just the most, like, beautiful romantic depiction of their relationship and, like, not at all, like, you know, it was not for you. It was the most, it's a French movie, but it was the most French movie I've ever seen, if that makes sense.
Sure, yes, yes. I'm already not interested. I don't know, I've probably seen a French movie. I enjoyed it at some point. I don't know anything about French movies.
Well, yeah, but... Yeah.
It seems just very French, artsy. Yes, like, yeah, precisely. Yeah, that does not sound like for me. Well, this was fun.
This was fun.
This is great. Thank you so much to everyone on our Discord and Patreon who submitted questions. Bonks, thank bonk, blah, 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 blah. Bonk, thank you for assembling them in this easy-to-read document here for us to discuss. And hey, I know it's a special episode here, but that don't mean we don't got a Bonku coming your way.
That's
oh,
right.
But I'm supposed to... Oh, I could have done... The segue was back there when I said thanks to everyone on the Patreon. Thanks to everyone who's part of the Patreon. I'm short-circuiting. $5 a month. We keep it easy. Access to the Discord. Yes. You get early episodes. You get ad-free episodes. Wow. And you get written for you by Bonk, a Bonku.
That's right, Daniel.
Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do. This week, we are honoring our friend Tyler.
Tyler.
Tyler, if you're out there, if you're listening to this, I hope you're having a great day. I hope there's a smile on that cutie pie face of yours. And this Bonku is for you. To Tyler's surprise, the machine had awoken, ready for its meal.
I like that. I like that. He's a Dr. Frankenstein type, I think, and he's got weird killer robots, and they eat, apparently.
Sure.
There is an intriguing story behind Tyler here.
Yes, Soylent Green.
Ah, yes, it's people, I hear.
It's people. Yeah. It's people!
It's weird, like Jerry Seinfeld and Soylent Green. thanks, everyone! Thanks to Tom Mondo for the theme song. Thanks everyone listening, and we will be back next week with more Painting the Stream.
Bye.
Bye.